Welcome to Belgium International Radio. You are listening to a program by Siegfried Pearson.
Good evening, and welcome to today's program where we take you to Antwerp. It is 1949, and Antwerp, the second city of Belgium, is recovering from the Second World War. Optimism rules, roads are laid out, and the construction of modern high-rise buildings drastically changed the skyline of the city. In 1949, Lorde Kreybex, the first mayor of Antwerp after the war, decided to organise a sculpture exhibition in his city. The exhibition at the Middelheim Park took place in the open air, which at the time was seen as a progressive way of showing sculptural work. The overwhelming success of this sculpture event encouraged the city to establish the park as a museum, the first open-air sculpture museum in the world. The core activity of the museum was the organisation of sculpture biennials, of which the first took place in 1951. The aim of the museum was ambitious. The Middelheim biennials had to become the counterpart of the famous biennial in Venice. All around the world, museums started showing sculptures in the gardens around their buildings. Despite the popularity of the biennials, it was nevertheless decided to discontinue the exhibitions in 1989. The city council explained their decision with the following argument.
A change in cultural climate is the reason that the city of Antwerp decides to no longer support the biennials in the Middelheim Museum.
In 1991, local elections caused an earthquake in the city. Vlaams Blok, the local Flemish right-wing party, won dramatically and established themselves in Antwerp. A year later, an external curator was appointed to reform the organisational and programmatic structure of the museum. In that period, the museum commissioned an art performance titled The Last Acquisition that became controversial in the years after. The Last Acquisition that translated the museum's entire collection into one single work was much debated after the closure of the park and is referred to by the philosopher David Dreyfus from the University of Leuven as the cause for a local iconoclasm. He argues that performance was one of the first steps towards the closure of the museum. What has happened to this once so important museum? What was the real reason behind the closure of its gates? I spoke to several people that were involved in the controversial history of this museum. I am calling Lidwien Kreybex, daughter of the late mayor and initiator of the Middelheim Museum.
Lidwien Kreybex.
Hello, this is Siegfried Pearson from Belgium International Radio.
You're calling me in a very bad moment.
I'm sorry.
Didn't you say that you would call me 2 hours ago?
Yes, yeah, sorry, we had a technical problem.
Yeah, I've been waiting for you. This is a bad moment. I'm on my way to an appointment right now. Call me later.
Hello, Siegfried Pearson here.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to ask you some questions about what happened in the early 90s in Antwerp, and more specifically about the Middelheim Museum.
Mm-hmm. Well, the end of the 90s were a problematic time in Antwerp. The city had been bankrupt over 10 years, so the inhabitants of Antwerp were unhappy. Politics were not able to change this. This dissatisfaction, amongst some other factors, caused a change in politics in the early 90s.
And how did this political change affect the Middelheim Museum?
Well, my father was a real socialist. He started the park and was very involved with the museum for 25 years until he died. So some said that the park was a socialist museum. When the political climate changed in Antwerp, the museum was affected by that.
Really surprisingly, the closure of the museum caused hardly any protests or reaction. What did you do when you saw this happening?
I couldn't do much. I was living abroad at that time. No, it went too fast. The problem is not that the collection got sold and is spread around the world. We could have reestablished it if there would be the money. The most unfortunate thing was that the archive of the museum got stolen in the first year after the museum closed. So only a few things were found later on the flea market.
The last piece that was commissioned by the city for the museum had ironically the name The Last Acquisition and was made by, I don't know if you know, the German artist Hermann Nachbar.
Nachbar
belonged to a controversial group of German artists that had links with the ideologies of the Italian futurists. What was Nachbar's role in all of this?
Nachbar. I contacted him for... Well, contacted him for the first time in 1996 when I moved back to Belgium. I tried to understand what he did there, but Nachbar doesn't want to have anything to do with this anymore. He has been asked to perform the piece that he did back then, or teach it to someone else. But he thinks that if he won't perform the piece anymore, that he will die as a legend. The sad thing is that when he will die, many people will despise him. It's so arrogant.
Mr. Nachbar, can you please explain to me why the authorities asked you to make this performance?
I don't know. They asked me. Work is work.
Why were you interested in doing the job?
Well, they paid me well for the translation of the park and I needed the money to live.
It has been said that the performance has been a direct cause for the closure of the park.
I have nothing to do with other people's agendas.
But what if your work might have been the cause for the closure of the park?
Well, Miss Pearson, new forms of art made the museum irrelevant. Who wants to see sculpture today? Kreidecks didn't live in the real world. He lived in books and ideas, and he didn't anticipate the future. Well, it's almost 70 years ago, but the museum wasn't meant to last. All this heavy weight of knowledge and history is destructive.
But some people say that you use this opportunity. You use it to make yourself indispensable.
People who believe in things are later seen as a problem. They are radical and change what's already there for the good cause of progress. I worked a long time and nobody liked the work except for some who knew how to look at it. Why would I be interested in retrieving a nostalgic dream?
So where has all this hard work gotten you?
Peace of mind, Miss Pearson, peace of mind. Goodbye.
Philosopher David Dreyfus, professor at the University of Leuven, recently stated in a paper about visual culture and politics that the Middelheim Museum could be seen as an example of a new iconoclasm. Dr. Dreyfus, iconoclasm has a religious connotation for me. Can you explain why you use it in relation to the sculpture park?
Yes, of course. Iconoclasm is the term that we use for the practice of destroying or ridiculing the cultural icons and symbols of a culture. This usually happens out of like religious or political motives, right? I don't know if you remember the famous videos that they were made after the Americans invaded Iraq. All the imagery of Saddam Hussein was destroyed and Hussein's sculptures were knocked off their pedestals. That's an example of the classical iconoclasm. Basically, I mean, it's the practice of destroying the imagery or icons of the ruling party.
But why did you use the term iconoclasm in your article in relation to the park?
Well, I used it to point out that what had actually happened there. What we have to face is it was indeed iconoclasm. But we have to just rethink of how we use this word now. The destruction of Middelheim didn't just happen in one evening or a week, but over the course of a few years and by different individuals who were acting out of different motives and ideologies and who had different levels of organization. The fact is that we would look at this event from very different eyes if we would consider it an iconoclasm. Now the closure of this museum just seems like a strange coincidence.
It's 2 days later now, and I'm in Antwerp. I'm walking down the Middelheim Laan, a busy cobblestone road that leads me to the premises where the museum used to be. I'm about to meet Badewijn Rombouts, the former director of the museum. Hello?
Badewijn Rombouts here. I call you to tell you that I am not coming. I changed my mind, excuse me.
But we agreed on meeting, Mr. Rombouts.
I'm sorry.
We can make another appointment. Can't you come along?
I just can't.
I thought it would be a good time. Have you visited the park since its closure?
I visited the park after the first big death. That must be about 22 years ago now. The thieves destroyed at the main gate at night and drove off with the rodin. They cut off the legs of a total geweld. It was easy. It's impossible to sell the sculpture, so they must have sold it as metal. They shipped it to China, or God knows where. It's broke my heart to see what's happened to the museum. After that, I never visit the park anymore. Can you tell me what you see, Mrs. Pearson?
I'm standing at what I suppose was the old entrance gate of the museum. Most of it's gone. Cut off. Also for metal, I assume. I can just walk in. There's nobody here. On my left-hand side, there's a large field. The grass is long, higher than my knees. On my right-hand side, there's a white building.
An office building. I picked up my belongings a few weeks after the city fired me. A police officer escorted me and kept an eye on what I took with me.
All the windows and doors are boarded up with wood. There's traces of black smoke around the windows.
Homeless people moved in. There have been several fires in the last 25 years.
There are still pedestals in the grass. The titles are still on them. Henry Moore King and Queen. And another one by Constant Meunier. But the sculptures are gone.
After the first thieves arrived, the city literally sold out the museum by some administrator that didn't have any clue about art. It was done in such a haste. A part of the works had been so damaged by vandals that it was impossible to sell them. I hear that they are stored in the harbor. Nobody knows what's left or what to do with them or where to start.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Are you still there?
Yes. In the end of 2009, the city silently made an agreement. They made a lot of money by selling the ground.
Some people blame you for the vanishing of the park. What was your involvement, Mr. Rombouts?
None. I had no involvement whatsoever.
You didn't have any benefit from the closure of the park?
Listen, Mrs. Pearson, I told you all I know. What do you want from me?
The truth, Mr. Rombouts.
The truth doesn't exist, Mrs. Pearson.
And as I took the phone from my ear, I shivered. It was as if an eye worked itself out of the darkest corner of my body and started floating above me and registered everything I did. There I was, standing in this field, an actor and director in my own story, part of life and observer at the same time. And while the eye was floating higher and higher, it made me look at myself standing there between the traces of this lost utopia, the overgrown grid of paths and pieces of parkland. Up it went, it turned around and looked into the sun until it blinded itself.
Can you tell me, what was your precise role as an external curator for the Middelheim Museum?
Excuse me, why are you calling?
I'm a journalist for the Belgium International Radio. I would just appreciate if you could answer a couple of questions for me.
Well, I heard already about your little investigations, Miss Pearson. But you don't really expect me to collaborate on that, do you?
If you could just answer my question, that would really...
Well, journalists like you have the bad habit to show only one side of the story. My answers to your questions won't change that.
What was your precise role?
No, I have nothing to say to you.
It won't
Bye-bye.
Take long, Mr. De Geyser. Mr. De Geyser? Hello? Hello?
The question for me remained if the park had really got lost, or if the park was simply unreachable, spread around the world in other collections and buried away in the body of Hermann Nachbar as a memory. When I looked into the matter, I found an article by Jean-Luc Naval, professor at the Department of Biochemistry of the University of Liège. He states in his article that any type of memory of action done in the past can be regenerated from the body. I visited Dr. Naval in Liège. Dr. Naval, what exactly is cellular memory?
The cellular memory is a hypothesis that such things as memories, habits, interests and taste may somehow be stored in all the cells of human bodies and not only in the brain.
Uh-huh.
This suggestion came up after a number of organ transplants in which the recipient was reported to have developed memories. Some recipients of the organs inherited a love for classical music, for example, a change of sexual orientation, change in diet and vocabulary, and in one case even an identification of the donor's murderer.
That's remarkable. So it's possible for people to inherit memories, habits and interests.
It functions actually very simple. Anything we do gets inscribed in our system. When a human being repeatedly performs actions and thoughts, this information will automatically become more ingrained in the body's memory.
So it would be possible to capture a thought or an experience from any person and use it in the future?
Technically, it's very possible for science to zoom into the DNA of the body and find the traces of specific actions or memories. Yeah, it's possible, but even if science is capable of doing this, it would at this moment not be supported by the law system.
But what changes would need to be made in the legal system to make this possible?
You know, at this moment, there will be no possibility for taking cells of a person if the person is not forced by law, or collaborating voluntarily, or collaborating collaborating voluntarily. The legal system, but first of all ethics, should change a great deal to be able to use the body memory of anybody without asking permission.
Hello, Hermann Nachbar?
Mr. Nachbar, you're speaking with Sigrid Pearson. Could you...
You again? You're wasting my time.
Mr. Nakba, please listen to me for a moment. Would you be willing to investigate the possibility of retrieving the museum through the use of your body memory?
Yes. What are you talking about?
What if I told you that it would be possible to capture the work you made for the Middelheim Museum without having to do anything for it?
I don't think I'm interested, and also, ich verstehe nicht, worüber Sie reden, Frau Pearson. Was soll das Ganze? Middelheim-Museum wieder
I'm talking about research that was recently conducted at the Department of Biochemistry in Liège. The research concluded with this statement that any experience that the body goes through is traceable through DNA. This would mean...
Lassen Sie mich da in Ruhe, Frau
Listen
Pearson.
To me. This would mean that if you donate some DNA, there would be a way of recapturing what you experienced there.
DNA, Miss Pearson, you're crazy. Just, you know... no way. It's too long ago, all of that Middelheim crap.
But listen, all you'd have to do is donate a cell, a single body cell. Even a hair would do, Mr. Nakbar.
No,
you could manage
way.
That.
Miss Pearson, auf gar keinen
Fall. A hair, Mr. Nakbar, is just a hair.
Körper. It's certainly also not of my interest.
Come on,
keine
I mean...
Keine Zelle von meinem Körper, Frau Pearson. Auf Wiederhören.
Mr. Nakbar? Mr. Nakbar?
On the 3rd of May 2018, an envelope addressed to me arrived to the studio in Brussels without any return address on it. In the envelope, I find a tape. When I listen to it, I realise that it's the speech that Kravex gave during the inauguration of the Middelheim almost 70 years ago. The tape had been part of the archive of the museum, and everybody thought that it got lost. On the 10th of November 1949, when I explained before the town council my idea of organising an exhibition of international sculpture, the chances of such an unusual initiative meeting with success could certainly not have been overestimated. As nearly always happens, the project provoked more scepticism than conviction. The park of Middelheim was still in havoc. The ground was impregnated with petrol and mineral oils, and the trees were gravely mutilated by explosions. It was therefore quite a difficult task to replace everything in a proper state. On the opening day, Zad Keane was among us. "How you will feel orphaned," he said, "when all this beauty will have left you." A passage from the inaugural address could, in a way, serve as a reply to the words of the renowned master. "Here, all around us, the violence of the war came during the darkened years to ravage much that was beautiful. At present, it is a sunlit peace that reigns, where folly and hatred did their destruction. The works of the spirit, conceived in numerous countries, have today here found their meeting place. Beauty, here present, leave us no more, because we shall try to hold you captive, that you may be ours, now and always."
Schoonheid, hier aanwezig, verlaat ons niet meer, want waarlijk, wij gaan pogen u gevangen te nemen, opdat gij ons bezit zult zijn, voor nu en voor altijd.